Morning, everybody. How are you doing this morning? That's good. My name is Brent. If you're new to Southridge, welcome. You're joining us in the middle of a series called Taboo, where we every week take a different topic to talk about things that oftentimes just don't get brought up in a normal church environment. And before we jump into today's topic, I want to give you a little preview of next week's topic. Next week's topic, we're going to be talking about sexual exploitation. And I have a lady coming to be part of that service who I heard speak last year. And she's a lady that runs a ministry in Toronto that rescues women out of prostitution. And so she's going to come and share. But one of the reasons I'm telling you that is we are at it, because of the sensitive nature of the subject, we are going to add a bonus week of Club 67 next week. So Club 67 will be out next week. But also, I just want to draw your attention to, on Monday night, not this Monday, but the following Monday night, we are going to have a special next class. And Cassandra, the lady who's coming, is going to be leading that. And she's going to be talking and sharing about how pimps and traffickers target your children, our children, online, and how you can protect your family by doing some simple things. And so if that is interesting to you, and we're going to talk about social media and some of the things that happen through social media, if that is interesting to you, just go on our website under the next tab and sign up for that class. And the class is called Locking the Door to Human Trafficking. So it'll be a great evening. Cassandra has tons of experience. It'll be well worth your time to come and listen to her and interact with her. But today we're talking about a whole different thing. We're talking about the subject of singleness. And I've never done a message entirely on singleness. And yet, if we think about our own lives, I'm sure there are people in your life, if you're not single here this morning, that you love that are single. I had a great aunt, Aunt Jessie, who lived to be 104, who was single her entire life. I have another aunt, my father's sister, who's in her 70s, who never got married. And so if you think about enough people in your sphere of influence in your life, you will come to realize there are single people in your life. And some of them never get married, and then some of them end up single because of number of things that happen in their life. And so before you think that this message doesn't apply to you, let me give you a truth about singleness. The first 20 to 30 years of your life, you were single. And then some of you were called out of singleness to get married. And the reality is, unless you die when you're married, you will again be single. And whether that's through divorce, whether that's through separation, or whether that's through your mate, your spouse passing away, you will once again find yourself being single. Yesterday, Pam and I were doing a premarital session with a couple, and we were talking about what the Bible says about marriage. And I always like to point this out, but Jesus actually tells us that marriage is a time-limited thing. When you get to heaven, there is no marriage. So what is Jesus saying there? Is that we will spend our eternity single. So I think all of us need to understand that at some point in our life, we were either single in the past or we are going to be single in the future. And so there's a lot to think about this morning. When you read the New Testament, when you read the Old Testament, and you read about what God calls us in life, one of the key elements of living, one of the key kind of descriptors that he uses, is that he calls us stewards. And oftentimes we talk about stewardship in the area of finances, but really when you understand what the gospel says about our life and our life in Jesus, is that we are to steward our life in following Jesus. And so for some of you here this morning, at this particular time, God is asking you to steward your life as a single. Others, God is asking you to steward your life as a married person. And I think we need to start off this morning by acknowledging that it is not always easy to be single in the church. The church often has such a focus on marriage and family that those of you who are single feel either left out or ignored or devalued in some way. Oftentimes, coming to church can be hard because you have to sit by yourself, or there's no one to talk to conveniently after the service. Or if you're involved in the church, there might be an expectation because you don't have a family, you should be involved in everything. Right? Gina D'Alfonso, a lifelong single, has written a book called One by One, Welcoming Singles into Your Church. She talks about the prevailing mindset in church. And she puts it this way. The church has ushered in a culture of courtship when it comes to singles, making it seem if you wait long enough, or if you write enough letters to your future husband or wife, pray enough prayers, sign enough purity pledges, you will receive the reward of marriage. But that's not how it works. There are godly men and women who have prayed, who have written letters, who have remained pure in their hearts and with their bodies, who have waited, and yet they still remain single. The church often treats singleness as a phase that just needs to be passed through onto something much better. As I was preparing, I read about a pastor who was preaching on singleness in New Zealand. And he came on stage and he said to his congregation, "I want all the singles to please stand up." And so a few people got up and he looked around. He goes, "No, no, I know there's more of you out there. Please stand up." And so more got up, and then he said, "Okay, everybody, look at these people. Look at them all. They need your love. They're beautiful. They're no different than the rest of us. They're just like you and me. They just need our love." You get this sense like they were treating like it was like a freak show. Like, let's pull the freaks up and look at them. Right? Wow. As if singleness, there was something wrong with singleness, that we needed to look at them and move beyond pity to love and include them in our lives. You see, as a church, we can be incredibly insensitive to singles. So I want to give you a sensitivity lesson this morning. And if your partner is here and you know that they suffer from insensitivity, maybe just give them a jab so they'll pay extra attention as I list some of these things. I'm going to give you some advice, and it kind of falls along the lines of advice that, like, you never ask a woman if she's pregnant kind of advice, right? That just leads to bad stuff. And all these things are from articles that I comb through that singles have said. So I'm not making this up. I'm not judging it. I'm just letting you know what not to say to singles. Because one of the things I want to do this morning is help us as a church make sure that we're a place where singles feel welcome, that singles feel a part of the church. And so let's just start off by not alienating them when we open our mouths, okay? So these are the things not to say to singles. Don't ask them why they're still single. One lady I was reading wrote, it said this, "It amazes me how many people, especially married men, seem to think that it's a good question to ask. They usually say something like, why is a lovely girl like you still single? Although I'm sure it's not meant to, it comes across as patronizing and embarrassing. And how are you supposed to answer that question?" Another thing not to say, don't compare your high school or college singleness to their adult singleness. It is not the same thing. You really don't understand what it means to be single as an adult, if that is your comparison. Don't ask them, "Are you gay?" Because oftentimes that's what people think. While you're not married, you must be gay. Right? Don't set two single friends up just because they're single and they're Christian. Like, that's not a good thing. Like, just because they're single and they're Christian means they should be together? And I think this one's more of a female one, because this is from a female who wrote this. Please don't complain in front of your single friends about having to have sex with your husband. If you want to have an honest conversation, she goes on to say, about how your expectations for sex have changed, by all means share. We absolutely care about that. But don't make flippant comments about how put out you are by your active sex life. Some of us are holding on by the skin of our teeth. And then this is the other flip side of what I said earlier. One of the ladies wrote, don't forget that when you say, I think I have a guy who would be a good fit for you, to actually follow through and make the introduction. She would say, how many times someone would say that to her and never follow through? And she would say, I need as a single for you to make the introduction if there is going to be any possibility of relationship there. Don't make your single friend's love life or lack of it the first thing you talk about when you get together. Don't tell your single friends that it's just about being content with their stage of life. Or say things like, I'm sure the Lord has someone out there for you. And then finally, don't assume that every single person is looking for a relationship. You see, people are single for two reasons. People are single either by choice or by circumstance. And if you happen to be here this morning and you're single by choice, I want to say a couple of things to you this morning. And the Bible doesn't have a ton to say about verses specifically addressed to single people, but some of them are found in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. And it's actually in a section or a chapter that is where Paul is talking about marriage, but he says a number of things to single people. And if you have ever read 1 Corinthians, the letter to the church at Corinth, you'll realize that when you get to chapter 7, Paul is answering a question that he has been asked by someone in the church. And the first seven verses, what he's talking about is, and what he's addressing is the sex-crazed culture that was in Corinth. There was such a pressure to have sex in Corinth. There was temple prostitution. It was just a normal way of life. You would go to the temple to worship, and part of that worship often included sex with the temple prostitutes. And so he's coming at it in chapter 7, and he starts off by saying, you know what, it is a good thing for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. And that's kind of what he starts off with saying and giving the biblical perspective that sex really is saved for marriage. And that relationship found in marriage. And he goes along, and in verse 7, he says this interesting phrase, or he states this. He says, I wish that all men, and he means women too here, were as I am. But each man has his own gift from God. One has this gift, and another has that. And what is he talking about there? What Paul is talking about there is that he had the gift of singleness. He had a gift given by God where he realized that he was going to be single for his life. And he embraced it. And there are a number of reasons why he does that. But I think for this morning, it is something that we need to sit and ponder on for a second. That singleness actually can be a choice. It doesn't have to be because of a circumstance. People actually can choose to be single because it is a gift that God is giving them. Paul will go on in this chapter to talk about marriage and how that marriage brings its own troubles. And that's partly why he's encouraging people to at least examine the single life. He wants to spare them from those troubles. And then he gets to verse 32. And in verse 32, he says this, I would like you to be free from concern An unmarried man is concerned only about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. And he'll say the same thing two verses later to the women. And he comes to the point of why you would even consider a life of singleness. Why you would make the choice to be single. And he says it comes down to the very simple fact that you can't fully, totally give your full attention to Jesus and follow him in that manner when you get married. That's just the truth. That's just the reality of life. When you get married, there is someone else in your life that demands attention and takes away full attention on Jesus. And usually when you're married, kids follow. And so it's not just your wife or your husband, it's your children that demand that attention and take part of your time, part of your finances, part of your, you know, passion. And if you really understand this chapter, he's not saying that marriage is bad. He's just pointing out to the reality that sometimes God asks people not to get married so that they can have their full attention on God and what he wants them to do with their life. You see, the gift of singleness is the ability to be single and not be burdened by it. The gift of singleness is the ability to be single and not be burdened by it. That's why in this same chapter, Paul will use, and you may have heard this phrase, if you burn with passion, you should get married, right? Because he's pointing out that not all of us have been given the gift of singleness. We burn with a passion for our fiance, our girlfriend, our boyfriend. And if he's saying that is you, then you need to deal with that passion by getting married. Now, I should backtrack as a father that if that's the only reason you're getting married, there are some issues and we need to chat about that, but that's not the message for today, okay? So parents, you can just go, phew. Brent didn't just say if you're horny, that's the only reason you need to get married, okay? Just making sure. Okay? I have two kids sitting in the service this morning, so they need to hear this. They need to hear it. Single by choice. But there are others of you here this morning that aren't single because you feel led to be single by God. You haven't made the decision to stay single because you believe it's a gift and a calling by God. There are some of you here this morning that are single by circumstance. And that circumstance may be a separation or a divorce. That circumstance might be death of your spouse. Or it might even be the circumstance you just haven't found that right person yet. And you desire to get married. And here's the reality in culture, even our culture today, the push to get married is fairly intense. And it seems to ramp up and amp up when it comes to being in the church. Paul's day was no different. Jesus' day was no different. Being single in Paul's day would be an anomaly. And so it's interesting that he calls us to consider that lifestyle as a follower of Jesus when in his own culture, marriage was seen as supremely important. Although their view of marriage was a little different than ours, we come at marriage and we think love first as the foundation of marriage. In Paul's day, marriage would be seen first from a utilitarian perspective. You got married so that you could actually just survive. And so that's why arranged marriages were, you know, the common thing of the day. Parents were marrying their children off so that their children would survive, that they would then survive as they got older because then they would have someone to look after them. And it wasn't necessarily about love. And in Paul's day, they actually had a Roman law about marriage that stated that every female citizen between the ages of 20 and 50 had to be married or they had to pay a tax. The only exception was for those who were vestal virgins. I just couldn't resist slipping the term vestal virgin into a sermon. Because when was the last time you heard that? And you're going, guys are thinking, what's a vestal virgin? Just so you, I'll save you the Google search. It was women who served at the temple of Vesta, who guarded and made sure the eternal flame kept burning. And part of their commitment to do that was they had to commit to 30 years of chastity. And then they would get a pension afterwards and they could get married. But there was only six of them. And yet they still had a hard time finding them, apparently. In my research, I did actually look it up. I was interested in going, what vestal virgins? But guys, 25 years old to 60 in Paul's day needed to be married, or they got taxed. And if your spouse died, you had kind of like a 2 to 3 year window to find someone else, or you started paying the tax, which means that Paul paid tax to be single. Both the Roman authorities and Jewish authorities realized the value of marriage and family because they wanted to make sure that their societies actually thrived. And the only way to do that was to have marriage so that families and children would come along. The pressure to be married is pretty intense, isn't it? So what do we do with this? How do we as a church make sure that those who find themselves in a single lifestyle by choice or by circumstance feel included? How can I help you, those of you who are married right now, to broaden your horizons, to open your eyes to the struggle that many singles face in their life? I think there's three things that I just want to kind of point out to you this morning to keep in mind as you think about possibly your role as a married couple or a married person, and as God brings single people into your life, how you can interact with them. I think there are some things that we all face and we have in common. And it doesn't matter whether you're married or single, there are things that we have to sort through. And the first one is this: everyone needs to have a gospel-centric view of life. If you are a follower of Jesus, it doesn't matter what marital state you're in, single or married. The call on you is to have a gospel-centered life where the gospel is at the center of your life, where following Jesus is the highest priority in your life. And so the question for all of us this morning, really at a basic level, is Jesus your highest priority in life? Is he? That's a question that each one of us needs to answer. Each one of us has to think about. I think if you're single here this morning, I won't put any restrictions on it. If you're single, I think one of the things you actually need to spend some time on, and you need to do this whether you're a teenager entering into your 20s, where you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s, one of the things you need to think about and pray about is this, is asking God, is singleness what you have for me? Is singleness something you are asking and calling me to live with in my life? That totally fights against everything that we kind of grow up with, right? I mean, the track is you get married, have family, have kids. But I think Paul, if you understand 1 Corinthians 7, he would challenge that notion and say, first and foremost, you need to go to God and ask, okay, in following Jesus, what are you asking me to do with my life, Jesus? And maybe for some of you this morning, the answer Jesus is going to give you is, I'm asking you to stay single. And if he is, what does that mean? I think there's some things in singleness that you need to understand that are gifts. And again, I take this from authors who are single, so I'm not just putting this out there as my thoughts. Some of the things that as I was reading, single authors pointed out, they said, some of them said, you know what? One of the gifts of being single is that I have the ability to spend an extended time focusing on God. And whether that's every morning when I get up because I don't have kids to chase after or a wife or a husband to worry about, I can get up and just spend my morning with God. I just can spend extra time with God. Others single, right? One of the gifts of being single is that just the freedom that comes with being single. You can pick up and do anything at a moment's notice. Yes, I know you need money sometimes to do that. But really, if someone asks you to go away on Friday for the weekend, you can go. You don't have to ask anyone else. You don't have to check any other calendar. It's just you. And you go. You can move across the country very easily. You can take jobs all over the world without having to worry about anyone else but yourself. You also can invest deeply into different relationships and spend more time with people than often married people can, building and developing those relationships. You can also spend more time praying bigger prayers. And maybe one of those prayers is, God, please bring me a mate. Fair enough. But if you're single right now, understand what kind of gift that is to you. And here's one that you can use all the time. As a single person, you can be a blessing to others. A number of years ago, Pam and I were leading a community group, and we had two friends, two sisters that were in our group. They were single. And they blessed us unbelievably. Alice and Sherilyn, you know, loved on us and loved on our kids. And they had an attachment with our kids where they would at least once a year say, hey, we need to have them over for a sleepover. And they would take them overnight. You know, I think the first time it was 2, and then Jaden came along, so it was 3, and then Kieran came along, and it was 4. And they would take them overnight and take them out and do something special in the afternoon and then bring them home. And I remember this one time when Pam and I were going on one of our teams that we were sending out to Bolivia. It was about a 2-week trip, and so we were leaving all 4 of our kids behind, and they were really young. And so they were going to go stay with my in-laws. And Allison and Sherilyn went, and they went and bought presents for each one of them for every day that we were gone. So they gave us this huge box for them to take up to Houston. And every day our kids got to open a present while we were gone to Bolivia. What a blessing. As a single person, there are some things that you can bless others with that married people just can't do. And maybe God is asking you this morning to just look around your life right now and the lives that you're involved in and is asking you, hey, use your singleness as an opportunity to bless someone else this morning. I think not only does everyone have to have a gospel-centric view of life, I think there's another piece. Everyone faces fear and loneliness. It's not the sole purview of being single to have fear or loneliness in your life. There are lonely married people. And I think it's important to realize that both those things can be true no matter what your marital state or non-marital state is. And we don't have time to go into talking about this in great detail, but I'll just say briefly, if you are here this morning and you're single or if you're married and fear is something you're wrestling with, the same kind of steps are true for both of you. And your fear might be over different things, fear of not getting married or fear of providing for your family or whatever that fear is, but it all comes down to the same kind of things that you have to walk through and process. And when you're dealing with fear, one of the things you have to do is you have to come to the place where you trust fully in the goodness of God. And you trust that God will provide for what your needs are, not necessarily always what your wants are. You need to get rid of those fearful thoughts and fill your minds with the truths of Scripture. And instead of dwelling on the fearful thoughts that come in, you need to fill your mind with the promises of God. You also need to come to the place where you can rest in God's purpose for your life. And whatever that purpose is right now, you need to be able to just say, okay, God, I'm okay with being right here, right now, and I'm just going to do what you're asking me to do. Loneliness is a hard thing. I read an article by Margaret Wendt that was printed in the Globe and Mail last year. And the title of it is The Awful Truth About Being Single. And this is not a Christian perspective, but she's writing this. She just basically laid it out and she said, they're incredibly lonely. And she made this interesting statement. She said this, saying you are lonely is worse than saying you have cancer. People just don't want to hear it. Loneliness is a tough, tough thing. But it can happen whether you're single or even married. Loneliness can happen in marriage, especially when it breaks down. The good news is there's a promise in Psalm 68. Psalm 68, verse 6 says this, God sets the lonely in families. And so if you're here this morning and loneliness is the thing you're struggling with, memorize this verse. Pray this verse. And if you aren't in a family yet, pray that God would set you in a family. And here's the thing. This is an Old Testament verse. But when you get to the New Testament, the idea of family changes. And in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus is asked or encouraged to talk to his biological mother and brothers and sisters. He says, you know, he's doing some stuff, and they said, hey, your mom, your family wants to talk to you. And he makes this interesting statement that he says, those who are my brothers and sisters and my mothers are the ones who do the will of God. And so what he's starting there is starting to help us understand the picture of what the church is supposed to be. And when we come to faith, what we do is we enter into God's family. And part of that is being in the church with our brothers and sisters. And so when I read Psalm 68, verse 6, and I understand it from a New Testament perspective, what God is saying there, I believe, is that God will set the lonely in family, and he does that in our day and age when Christians come together and he sets them in the church. The church. And so that means that there is an onus on us as the church to embrace those who are lonely, to include into community those who are hurting. That's on us. You see, I believe everyone needs community. Everyone needs community. How else do we live out the 50-plus one another's in the New Testament, where we're commanded over and over a number of things to do, but we can only do it when we're doing it with others? That includes single people. We need, as a church, to respond to those who might be lonely, those who are facing special circumstances, to include them into community. Because we ourselves know how much we need community too. So what can you do practically? So if you're married here this morning, this is for you. As you think about the single people in your life and the single people in our church, if you come into the service on a Sunday morning and you see a single person sitting there, why not invite them to sit with you? Or give up your spot, because I know you all have claimed your own spots, which you think that chair is yours for perpetuity. How about you move from your spot this Sunday and go and sit somewhere else? Right? I know. I could take attendance on Sunday morning. Just by looking, I can tell if you're here or not, because you always sit in the same spots. Okay, there are a few of you who are rogue and you move to other spots. I understand that. I have my eye on you too. But I'm just kidding. But invite that person to sit with you. My wife complains about this to me sometimes. Not complains, she just mentions it. She is what we call a church widow or a pastor's widow. I very rarely sit with her on a Sunday morning because I'm getting ready to come up here. I'm up here, and then after the message, I go and sit in the front row so I can come back up and close the service, right? It's only on the times when I'm not speaking that I have a chance to sit with her. And even then, sometimes I get called away to do something. She understands what it's like to sit by herself on a Sunday morning, and she's not even single. If you see someone by themselves, whether they're married or not on a Sunday, why not just invite them to sit with you or go sit with them? If you have single friends, send them a text message this week. Just saying, hey, how you doing? Pray for them, even better. And then tell them, hey, I prayed for you this morning. How's life going? How's life treating you today? Just reach out to them to let them know that you care about them. Open up your community group to singles. Take stock. Who's in your community group right now? Is it all couples? I'm letting you know right now that you're missing out on the fullness of what church can be if you don't have singles in your group. This is a challenge to me because my community group has only couples in it right now. So I'm speaking to myself. Include your single friends in your family's activities. Invite them over for lunch, even if it's just one person, right? Not, I was reading one guy, he said he'd been going to a church for a while and been there for a while, and then he brought a friend one Sunday, a female friend, to church. And he was talking with this couple that he kind of knew, and they invited both of them to come over for lunch afterwards. And his thought was, why didn't you invite me before? When I was just here by myself on a Sunday. If you have single friends, invite them into your life. Call them up on Friday night and see what they're doing. Have them come over and watch that family movie with you. Include them. Don't be afraid to. Kevin Strickland, in writing on this, says, I think the one universal truth I've seen in the church is the desire for meaningful connection. Sometimes people can hide behind the connections they already have, and this causes me to feel isolated. But when one of us is brave enough to reach beyond those walls and beyond the pride that separates us, that is when I have experienced meaningful connection. With that said, I have been in some brave churches and some not so brave churches. I was only truly changed in the brave churches. Let us be a brave church when it comes to singleness. Let us be the ones that reach out and understand that everyone has a gospel-centric mandate. That God asks every single one of us to live a life for Him. And that may look differently for each one of us, but that call is still the same on us. That every single one of us has moments where we have fear and deal with loneliness. And that every single one of us needs to find community and connection in some way. Let us be the body, the family that God wants to place the lonely into. I think the thing for us today to look at is, who has God brought into your life that you can invite into your life, especially if they're single? That's the church I want to be. I want to be part of a brave church that steps out of their comfort zone and changes people's lives because we're willing to get beyond just doing things as normal. What about you? Let me pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you today as we come before you. Lord, I thank you for the singles in our church. Lord, some of them are single because they've chosen to be single because they feel that's what you're asking them to do. Lord, there are others here this morning who are single by circumstance. And Lord, they're trying to deal with a number of things. And they're calling out on you. They're asking you for guidance. They're asking you for sustaining them. They're asking you for their future, your future plans for the life. And so, Lord, I just pray that you would Speak to them. Lord, I pray for those who are single right now to be able to just understand what a gift that can be in this moment of their life, and to evaluate how they're using and stewarding that aspect of their life right now. Lord, for those who aren't single, help us to truly understand and reach out and connect with those who are. Help us to be sensitive in how we talk and what we say. But ultimately, Lord, I pray that all our actions would come out of the love that you call us to do in our lives. You call us to live and follow you, and that means we need to love those you bring into our circle, our living. Lord, today, this week, as we've been mindfully brought into attention singleness, help us to focus on those singles in our life and include them in our life. In Jesus' name, amen.